This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual, with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Naz, you got thumbs up. To those of you watching us live video streaming at www.zoomerradio.ca.
Oh, what a feeling.
And Naz got his thumbs up. He's got his Raptors cap, and he's all excited this morning. But it's going to be a big show today. We've got Butch Carter coming on shortly after the first break. Talk some Raptors. Bottom of the hour, John Steinbrenner, one of the golf's great writers, is going to be talking about the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. But first of all, before we start off with the sports talk, to all the fathers out there, have a fantastic Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you, Naz.
You too, Wally.
Thank you so much. Always take this opportunity on Father's Day to reminisce about a fine man that I used to enjoy watching hockey with, that we used to enjoy watching hockey with. I'm talking about Naz's father. It's Tommaso, right?
Tommaso.
Yeah, he's the ultimate Leafs fan, with all due respect to Mike Wilson.
He's a Toronto fan, too.
He's a Toronto fan, too. Yeah.
He really loved the Raptors, man.
And some tremendously fond memories of watching sports in your place, your family room, your basement, Naz. We had a lot of fun when we were younger. And those are the mid-1970s Leafs with Sittler and
Pyramid
Lanny
and
all those guys. Yeah. And so when I think of Father's Day and got you sitting across the table from me, it certainly brings back memories. And once again, to all the fathers out there, have a spectacular day. Just a little announcement before we go on. This will be the last Naz and Wally Sports Hour for this season. God willing, and we certainly hope to be back in September. We're going to take a little hiatus for the summer. I call it a well-earned break, Naz. We've been going at it strong for 5 years and a bit. And it's time to recharge the batteries. And like I said, we hope to be back early in September. At that point, we'll call it the Naz and Wally Sports Hour 2.0.
Beautiful.
Anyways, it's been a fantastic 5 years for us on the air. We've never taken a Sunday off. We've been doing the show straight without a break. It's time for a break, and we've had some interesting shows. And you know, when we first came on the air, Naz, there's three things I said I wanted to see in my days sporting accomplishments that I wanted to see. I wanted to see the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup again. I wanted to see Italy win the World Cup of Soccer. And I wanted to see Notre Dame win another football national championship. If they had taken me to my top five, I probably would have gone to say the Toronto Raptors winning the NBA Finals. That would have been fourth or fifth on my list. But we got it. And remarkable spring for the Toronto Raptors. It was up and down, culminating in a game six win in Oakland. What a parade it's going to be tomorrow. What a celebration it's going to be. Naz, give you an opportunity.
The parade starts near here, Lakeshore.
Yeah, right across the street from the studio here. Yeah. We're in Liberty Village. Your thoughts, Naz?
Well, it was a well-deserved victory because the Raptors deserved to win the title, and they were really, really good. I said this during the season. They had in the old Rocky movie, the Eye of the Tiger, and they had the Eye of the Tiger. They weren't going to be stopped. They physically dominated Golden State, which I was surprised at. It turns out Philly may have been the toughest test because how physical they were, but the Raptors were tough as nails.
Well, you know what, and it's all about matchups. Playoffs is all about matchups, and it's all about coaches making adjustments. And, you know, the key is make it to the playoffs, and the higher seed you are, the better.
Yeah.
And if you make it to the playoffs, anything can happen. Just ask the St. Louis Blues. Talk about a story that we probably didn't, with all the Raptor hoopla and mania in Toronto, we probably didn't talk about the St. Louis Blues and what they accomplished all that much. But I think the point is, you make the playoffs and anything can happen. And in the playoffs, it all depends on, you know, it depends on matchups, yeah. Depends on coaching strategies. And, you know, the Raptors did what they had to do, but they didn't, you know, they are NBA champions, well-deserved NBA champions. Give all the credit. You know, at various times during a season, you can criticize, you can micromanage, you can pick out a game here and there. You can say, why did he make that coaching decision? Or why did that player have such a lousy game? Kyle Lowry, 0 points in, I think it was the first game against Philly or the first game against Orlando. I can't remember now. It seems like ancient history now. You know, you can micro criticize individual performances in one game, but when you take the overall perspective, wow, the accomplishments of the Toronto Raptors this year, and we're going to talk to Butch about it very, very shortly. You know, at the end, they did what they had to do, and they got better, and that's, you know, Stanley Cup champions, NBA Finals champions, they get better as the playoffs progress.
And you can't win without a bench.
You can't win without a bench. And you have to fight adversity. And the Raptors, you know, lousy game against Orlando, game one, and we all got excited and
they're choking again.
The usual stuff comes out. And sometimes, you know, we got to be self-critical too, Ness. Sometimes we get over exuberant about one bad game or whatever. But I think I've been consistent in my theme throughout. Say, we can't micro analyze on one game. You know, you're going to lose a game here and there. You're going to have a bad performance here and there. But in retrospect, you know, Nick Nurse took some criticism at various times, but you know, let's say he outcoached Steve Kerr, one of the legendary NBA coaches. Or if you don't want to jump to that conclusion, you can reasonably say he made some really good moves. Got criticized for a couple of moves in Game 5, but came back in Game 6, and that's. The one thing I'll remember about this Raptors team is their ability to bounce back. They had bad games and bad performances from game to game, got themselves in a hole against Milwaukee. They were right on the cusp of being knocked out. You know, you're in double overtime, game three, down 2-0. You lose that game, you're done.
Yeah.
But they fought back and, you know, took a couple of hits from Golden State, fought back. Nick Nurse fought back. Kyle Lowry, what an outstanding performance.
11 points.
You know, the much maligned Kyle Lowry at various times strapped the team to his back in the first half of Game 6.
Can't forget Kawhi.
And Fred VanVleet. Where did that come from?
Game 3.
Fred VanVleet actually got
of his baby. Yeah,
I think it was in the Philadelphia series. I mean, we were fairly critical, and you know, like, at times he looked like lost out there. But man, what a performance against the Golden State Warriors. And enough Hubie Brown, although I think Hubie is a little bit over the top, voted Fred VanVleet as the most valuable player. I mean, Kawhi Leonard got all the votes except for one vote that went to Fred VanVleet.
Pascal Siakam played 46 minutes in the last game, Wally.
Yeah.
46.
It just, this would probably be an opportune time to go to break because we want to keep the Raptors talk going for a bit, and we've got Butch Carter on the line to our listeners. We got a couple of Pizzaville gift coupons we're going to give away during the show. So keep your fingers handy next to your phones. $50 gift coupons, Pizzaville. They're always hot items. At some point in the show, we'll be giving out the numbers to call in. We'll be right back with former Raptors coach Butch Carter.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that people may not know how many different kinds of ponzos Pizzaville makes. You can go Italian if you like a sausage. You can go Hawaiian if you like ham and pineapple. And you can go Canadian if you like bacon, beer, and hockey. We can build a ponzo that speaks your language, no matter where you are from. Call Pizzaville on your cell phone at #3636 or visit pizzaville.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour this morning former Raptors coach Butch Carter. Butch, how are you this morning, my friend?
Good. How are you guys doing? Happy Father's Day to everyone and your listening audience.
Thanks so much, Butch, and happy Father's Day to you as well. Butch, we're put it in words for us. One of the most significant victories in Toronto sports history, arguably perhaps the most significant from a non-sporting perspective. But give us your thoughts. When that final whistle went and the Toronto Raptors were NBA champions, what did it mean to you?
Well, I could let all the air out of the balloon. And on my to-do list before I leave this earth, that big box of the Raptors being a champion, as I've tried to tell people the last 23 years that I've been up here, that they should be. I was totally relieved, and I was happy for so many people who have toiled to help the Raptors get to where they got to. A lot of people still in the front office, in the working office, just longtime Raptors fans. Guy announcer like Paul Jones, who grew up here, and it's so important to him, does the radio for TSN and Rogers. Just guys that, male and female, that have toiled and paid the price behind the scenes to help the franchise grow. And it was also awesome that 3 or 4 days building up to when they were going to finally win it, to see across Canada the unity that the Raptors were bringing amongst all Canadians. When you looked at the Jurassic Parks that were being set up initially in the GTA area, then they start popping up in Montreal and out west. I just thought it was an unbelievable unifying moment. And a long time ago, a guy named Pierre Trudeau decided to grow Canada through immigration. And basketball was one of the sports that the immigrants loved. And it's just worked out so well for everyone. I think all Canadians should be proud. And when they want to and they're in the United States, they can tell them they're a Raptors fan.
But they seem to be a no-give-up type of a team. They had the old Rocky movie, Eye of the Tiger. That's what I found. How about you?
They got help from somebody whenever they needed it. So if it was Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, you know, they just got the help that they needed. Danny Green did not play well except for one game in Oakland where he made the 6 threes, and it was a game changer. So they got the help from where they needed. I thought at the end Kawhi was just exhausted. Kyle Lowry's shooting in the first half, they got him off to a good start. They won the first quarter in a critical game. And at the end of the day, everything just piled up the right way for them. They are just very mentally tough. And when you take a team that's won 22 games on the road in the Western Conference in the regular season, you should know that they feel very good about playing out West. And they were just extremely tough-minded. They overcame everything. A mistake was a mistake. They didn't carry the mistake with them into the next day. They're just a very mature, competitive group, and that's kind of what you need. And for me, it was really a double win. One of my high school classmates, Jim Cooper, is a minority owner in the St. Louis Blues, and the Blues win the ultimate hockey trophy, and the Raptors tell the United States that they're king of the hill in a sport that a Canadian invented.
We're talking to Butch. Butch, you know, it's remarkable, and I would not have anticipated this, and I'm still trying to grasp where it came from. It's remarkable how there was this outpouring of, I don't want to call it affection, support across the entire country. It was just like it all bloomed at the same time. And it's a phenomenon I've never, ever, ever seen in Canadian professional sports. You know, the only equivalent, the Canadian national team sports, the national hockey team, 1972. The phenomenon of Canadians, not just in, you know, I understand the Toronto perspective, fine, the Blue Jays, whatever. But this phenomenon across the entire country. You know, you look at Montreal and the hundreds of thousands of people celebrating, Vancouver, Saskatoon, you name it. And people are out in the streets celebrating a victory in a professional sports league that's dominated by Americans. And I'm sure the sociologists, professors in all the universities are going to try to figure this out. Did you see this coming?
I always said this is what it was. You got to remember, I'm the guy that had to sit and argue with this knucklehead Petty about putting Toronto on the jersey instead of Raptors. Now someone comes along later and says, "We the North." And the "We the North" basically said, let's capture, you know, there's been a lot of seeds planted. They play in Vancouver. They play in Montreal. You know, and people, we've been told forever, some people up here have said forever, you know, basketball's a secondary sport. You know, I mean, what MLSC did with their advertising on We the North and the campaign where they play the exhibition games out West, you know, they basically made the team the country's team. And, you know, Toronto, we're so much better off. The Raptors are. We have a population of 35 million to market to. No basketball team in the NBA has 35 million to market to. You look at the TV ratings. At some point during the game, 8 million Canadians tuned in to the game. And those aren't counting the ones that were standing outside. So, you know, I just think that, you know, momentum. When you get momentum in a sports franchise, it's one of the most awesome things in the world. And I think it will last forever. I don't know if, you know, when or ever in our lifetime, Walter, will see another championship unless Kawhi comes back. But I just believe that I was like everyone else, that the impossible, in which we were told by a lot of people, the hockey people protect their space as sacred ground. The Americans, you know, Paul Pierce saying we didn't have it. I just think it was the ability for the Canadians to stand up for who they are and what they are. And there was enough of them who did it, and everyone's been affected in a positive way. Like I said to you, I mean, I go in the hardware store, and the guy's like, you know, are you going to watch the game? You know, and these guys are a lot older than me, and I don't imagine they ever watched, you know, basketball. But, you know, guys who never had basketball touch their life were staying and watching the game because they had something that they could be proud of. And I think that's what something you can be proud of and share at work. And, you know, it's been a great integrator of people, and that's what basketball should do. That's what sports should do. It should integrate people, all kinds of people, young, old. And I just think that all of people who gave it a chance wanted to celebrate, and I'm glad the Raptors closed it out against Golden State so they could celebrate.
A concerning injury in games. Five with Durant.
Yeah, I believe I said he would never play because he never sat on the bench. When you don't sit on the bench in NFL or NBA, that means that your injury is so severe they feel you wouldn't be able to get out of the way if someone came your way. So he didn't sit on the bench. He had a partially torn. They covered it up with the hockey analogy of lower body injury, but I believe he had a partially torn Achilles. He went ahead and ripped the rest of it to try to help them win a game. They were playing very well when he was in the game. They didn't deserve to win game five, but they did. You know, at the end of the day, Golden State, because of what Durant did, they've got to offer him the 5-year, $190 million max. I don't believe he can get the Supermax because they don't have his rights for a Supermax, but he and Clay. But there have been championships won before Naz with guys getting hurt. Byron Scott and Magic Johnson pulled groin muscles, and they lost one. Isaiah gets hurt. There are games in which people get hurt, and it's unfortunate. But think of it. They're playing in over 100 games. They're on their 110th game, and you can only stretch a rubber band so far, guys. And year after year after year of these 100 games, the rubber band stretches too far. And look at the history. Kawhi had more games, more playoffs than a lot of guys, and it caught up with him. It just does catch up with you. You hope that it wouldn't catch up with you in the playoffs, but it does, and history is very clear that championships have been won. There's no asterisk beside what the Raptors did because there's no asterisk beside all the rest of the prior champions.
Talking to Butch Carter, a couple of more questions. Butch, we've got to move on. Earth-shattering news coming out of L.A. yesterday. Not so sure it's earth-shattering, but it's may turn a few things upside down. Anthony Davis going to the L.A. Lakers. What does that mean?
Well, it just means they get a very talented player. You got to remember, Anthony Davis has not won many games in New Orleans. So being traded doesn't mean that you're automatically going to become a winner. Yes, he is one of the outstanding talents, but remember, he's a big, so the number of possessions he can be in is very limited. He doesn't guard wing players, and if you look at the scoring on the West, all the scoring is on the perimeter. So from Portland, Oklahoma City, Golden State, the scoring's on the perimeter. So, you know, he's basically, you know, in my opinion, he's a dinosaur being put into a system. And Frank Vogel's going to have to figure it out pretty quick because if he's not, LeBron's going to be breathing down his throat. LeBron is 33 years old, and they still could sign another max player. But they need another wing player. They did not lose anything by trading Ingram. It actually did them a favor. And if someone can't straighten out his shooting, they did him a favor also because it gets away from the distraction of his father. The three draft picks won't be worth anything if the Lakers are winning. And most people with those picks, when they move around and change, they get stuck and won't draft the best player. You know, when you go back and look at the acquisition of Van Fleet and Siakam, those guys end up being in your top six players. One's not drafted at all. The other one's drafted late. You know, all the pieces fell in place. And a lot of times for general managers and presidents, they don't fall in place because most of them don't know what they're doing. But at the end of the day, the Lakers will be the Lakers. The Lakers keep trying to sell the Lakers off their history instead of actually what they're doing. And as long as you're selling off your history, you're going to fail. Things have to get done. It's a grown man's league. GMs want to make decisions in an office and then not take responsibility for them on the court. So, you know, a lot of credit goes to Masai. He made a lot of tough decisions, and he's extremely alpha male, and it worked out, and it worked out for a whole country.
Is Ujiri going to Washington, Butch?
I don't think he's going to Washington. I think, you know, his agent is going to use Washington as a counter to what Toronto having to redo Masai's contract. So, you know, if he does go to Washington, that would mean that someone said, you know, do we really have to pay the president of our team $10 million? And they decide not to do it. but at the end of the day, it's his choice. Washington is in a horrible situation, probably even worse than what Masai took over in Toronto. I believe Masai's wife is from Washington, but I believe he'll make a professional decision, not based off of that alone. But you guys both know that sometimes when those other 10 toes hit you, you have to change your mind about things. You know, I think from what I'm seeing, the inside reporter in Washington is saying there's no offer there, and Masai's agent, Warren LeGarry, is countered with the ESPN reporter saying, oh, there's a tremendous offer waiting. So, you know, I just believe they try to do this to say to get him involved with the Laker job. And that firm had already screwed up the Lakers when they represented Mitch Kupchak and Jimmy Buss. So they couldn't get back in there. So I just think it's point counterpoint, and it will be what it is. And he earned the right to be in that position. So, you know, best of luck to him.
Butch, the Pelicans trade for Davis. They got a fourth pick in the draft, three of them from the Lakers, right? Fourth pick is this pick. Do you see a flip with the Knicks and Barrett and Williamson playing together in New Orleans?
I would think they'll ask the Knicks to do the flip. I know that R.J. Barrett was in New York for 2 days working out this past week, working out, meeting people. The Knicks like him. Personally, I do not like R.J. Barrett. If you look, you know, what we did was we went through his 8 games against the top 4 teams in the ACC. He was very ineffective in those games. He's a left-handed player that has failed on his development because he can't do anything with his right hand going right. RJ Barrett is a good player. He is not a great athlete. As I explained to the people I was talking to, the greatest wing player ever play at Duke is Grant Hill, and RJ Barrett doesn't come close to Grant Hill as an athlete. And if you're going to be a wing player, you're going to have to guard athletes. RJ didn't guard anyone at Duke. It was a core reason why when we drafted Vince Carter over Antoine Jameson at North Carolina, I was able to prove to the staff that Antoine Jameson could not guard a wing player. He had no defensive position. And when you have no defensive position and you're a young team, you get slaughtered by the officials. So, my advice, whoever gets RJ, if they don't get him changed around in the first 2 summers, I understand that he is a nice young man and he is Canadian, but he would not be what I'm looking for, because he wants to shoot up all the balls and not guard the best player at this stage of his career, and that would have to change.
Now we're talking to Butch Carter. Butch, we got about 30 to 45 seconds before we go to break, and we can't let you go without asking you this. Kawhi Leonard is going to be in a Raptors. Is he going to be in a Raptors uniform next year?
Well, I told someone a long time ago, the more they won, the less likely he would be there. I mean, Kawhi has delivered a championship to a country. I don't think people are going to be mad if he decides to go home. I understand we all want him back. But, you know, it's his call. I think that he told San Antonio when he asked out he'd go wherever he went and play his best for 1 year, but he was headed home. My gut feeling is that they'll make a decision very privately. There won't be much discussion about it outside of who he speaks to in the office, him and his uncle Dennis Robertson. They have handled everything, I believe, very professionally, have done nothing but bring class and a trophy to Toronto. And again, they have earned the right to meet his obligation on his contract. I actually believe he exceeded his right on his contract. And when you have a player like Kawhi, whatever you pay him is not fair compensation, especially when you win a championship that goes across the country and people can't buy enough of gear. So the gross revenue per seat for Maple Leaf sports and basketball is going to go through the roof. There were rumors that they were netting $20 million a game on the Raptors' home games. So he's earned the right, and I would think this is what I know about Kawhi, is that he has a commitment to help young kids like himself in Southern California. And the issue at the end of the day will be, will he feel that he can do that from playing in Toronto? I believe that's what it's going to boil down to. It's not going to boil down to money. I believe that he has a sincere interest in assisting and opening his own gym and helping kids in Southern California who came from an impoverished background, disadvantaged background like he did. And I believe that's, in my heart, that's how what he'll make his decision on. And everybody throwing all this junk at him will not affect him at all, no different than the only thing that got him to dance was a trophy. And I'm so glad he got the trophy for the country and for the city of Toronto.
Anyways, Butch, we'll leave it at that. We want to take the opportunity at this point, obviously, to thank you for all your contributions to our show this year. It turned into an incredible, incredible ending, fairy tale ending, and it's been a privilege to go along that ride with you during the entire year. Thanks so much, Butch.
Thanks for having me, Walter and Naz. Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much, Butch Carter. We're going to go to break, Naz, and then we're going to go from the hard court to the green of the golf course, and we'll talk some U.S. Open golf. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville announced their loyalty program, but some listeners thought I was saying royalty program. To be clear, Pizzaville cannot get you into the royal family. Stop that. However, after your sixth online order, you'll get a large pizza of your choice free with your seventh order, and that'll make you feel like a king or queen. Oh, boy. Find out more at pizzaville.ca.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive, we'll likely save you money too, but the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour is a paid program. Opinions expressed on the show are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. And as promised earlier on the show, we've got some great Pizzaville gift coupons to give away. $50 each. Fantastic pizza from the good people at Pizzaville. Our phone number is 416-360-0740. Toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Naz, those pizza things go pretty quick. The phones light up before I can even get the numbers out.
It's like a Christmas tree.
Anyways, it's U.S. Open Sunday, and it's one of the most important days in the golf calendar. U.S. Open always seems to fall on Father's Day. I've got to ask John Steinberg, but we're pleased to welcome back to the show one of the world's great golf writers, senior editor, senior writer for Global Golf Post, one of the great digital golf magazines in the world. We're always thrilled to have him on the show, John Steinbreder. John, how are you this morning?
Good morning. How's everyone? And happy Father's Day and happy U.S. Open Sunday.
Thanks so much, John. And, you know, I usually plot out a bunch of questions I want to ask you. There's certainly some areas I want to ask. And something just occurred to me just as I was introducing you. Maybe you might have more of an historical perspective than I do. But, you know, it seems in my lifetime or since I can remember, the U.S. Open has always been on Father's Day. Is that always been like that, or is that just a recent occurrence?
You know, I don't know if I would call it recent. I think in my lifetime, too, it's sort of always been like this. I think there were times, you know, early on when it was held in different times of the year. But in my recent memory, this has always been the weekend, which I think is fantastic. It's a time of year that allows them to go to courses in all around the U.S., all different climates. You know, there's been some talk a little bit about the PGA now in May. Will that eliminate the ability to go to a Kohler or an Oak Hill up in Rochester or some of the more northern climes? But, you know, June's a pretty good, you know, mid-June's a great time of year for golf courses, whether you're down in Texas or whether you're up in the Northeast or out in Pebble Beach. So I really don't know. I just think as far as I can remember, it's been on this weekend, and I think it's a great time, and it works for everybody, and it's a lot of fun. I hope they never change it. I doubt they will. I think it's locked in here and will be for as long as we can imagine.
U.S. Open Sunday, one of the great golf venues in the world, one of the most spectacular golf courses in the world. Although, to be frank, John, some of the purists might debate that, but certainly some of the greatest vistas in the world, Pebble Beach. Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Louis Oosthuizen. What do you see? What do you see happening this afternoon?
Well, it's pretty good leaderboard, isn't it? That's not bad, and I think it's been going great. Kudos for the USGA for not losing their minds so far in this tournament and overthinking the setup. I think it's playing well. It's playing fair. I like seeing, you know, 10, 11 under, 8 under, 9 under. I mean, that's nice. You know, I want to see some birdies. And if you go off the fairways, we saw yesterday getting that rough, man. It's not easy getting out of there. You saw, you know, Woodland, as strong a guy as he is, on a couple of occasions, just you know, have a hell of a time getting out of that rough. So I think, you know, fasten your seatbelts for just a great afternoon, evening of golf. The evening for us in our parts of the world. By the time they get those last groups make the turn and start coming home on the back nine, but it should be fantastic. You know, my thinking is always with these things that the person who's never won a major is going to feel the most pressure. So I think it's going to be very hard. We remember what happened to Dustin Johnson back in 2010 when I think he shot an 80 on the last day and got in trouble right from the start. And it'll be interesting to see how Woodland handles it. He's just playing brilliantly with a lot of confidence, with a lot of verve and ease. But you've got, you know, Justin Rose, you've got Koepka, you've got Rory, you've got Usti. I mean, there's a pretty good bunch right there, all of whom have won at least one, if not multiple, majors, and all of whom have a lot of confidence. So I think it's Woodland's to win, but he's going to feel pressure like I don't think he's ever felt before as you go through this. And you got four or five guys behind him who have experienced this pressure and know exactly what today's going to bring.
Of course, you made a really interesting comment that it just occurred to me. We're talking to John Steinbreiter. As for the first time in recent memory, the USGA has not been part of the story. They've sort of stayed out of the headlines. This particular week, it's been a while because they come under constant criticism for course setup. And I guess when you're dealing with a place like Pebble Beach, it's such a masterpiece that, you know, nobody will allow you to tamper with it that much. But Pebble Beach evokes it's like it's one of the holy grails of golf. It's up there with Augusta and with St. Andrews, and if you're a passionate golfer, it's on everybody's bucket list of places to golf. And there's some incredible golf memories there, too. Of course, we're talking about Tiger Woods in 2000, where he obliterated the field and the course. And, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, John, your golf memory is probably better than mine. But isn't that the infamous Tom Watson-Jack Nicklaus battle where Watson on 17, I think, holed out from off the green?
Absolutely. I mean, I described it in a preview piece I did as America's golf course. And by that, I mean it is a course that's hosted multiple major championships. This is its fifth U.S. Open. It's had five U.S. amateurs. It's going to have another Open in 27. It's had the Crosby since 1947. So, and it's a regular stop on the PGA Tour. So it's not only a course that the tour professionals are intimately familiar with, but it's also one as golf fans that we're intimately familiar with in ways that we're that familiar with Augusta. Even if you've never been there, you've tuned in to watch it year after year after year, so you know the holes. And it is also because you can go out and play it, it's probably the one major championship course that more people in America, in North America, have certainly played more than any other U.S. Open venue. So for all those reasons, to me, it is America's golf course. It is not a golf links. They call it the Pebble Beach Golf Links, which is, once again, the word links being misused. It is not at all a links. And, you know, I put it in the top 25 in America. I wouldn't put it in the top 10 in terms of overall architecture, and just being a great design, but it is a really good golf course. The first few holes are kind of ho-hum, but man, those holes from number 4 through number 10 are as good a stretch of golf holes as there are in this earth. And I think 16 is a super hole, and 17 and 18 are two of the best finishing holes in the world. And 18 was originally a par 4, and very early on before the 29 U.S. amateur out there got changed into a par 5. And I think it's just a great venue for this. And yeah, you mentioned, you know, the tournaments that have been there. I mean, Nicklaus won in 61, Nicklaus won a U.S. amateur there. And then in 72 was the first time it had hosted a U.S. Open, which is kind of interesting. And I think that speaks to the isolation of the area. And it just took a while for the USGA to start going there. And Nicklaus won in 72, and he hit that epic one iron into 17 that hit the flag stick and left him a little tap-in birdie there. And then Watson, of course, winning in 82 in just the most formidable fashion with that great chip-in on 17. So it's such a classic shot. And then, you know, Tom Kite, I believe it was in 92 with Kite, when he shot 72 in the last day when it was howling. And then Tiger, of course, maybe the greatest major championship performance in our lifetimes ever, even when he won by 15 shots in 2000 and just eviscerated the course, the field, and you know, just in the middle of his incredible dominance of the game of golf. So it really is a special place. It's a place we can all go play, albeit with a lot of money down. It's a place that works out well for a major championship like this. And you know, I think what the USGA has learned finally is that, you know, that they just need to kind of work with the people out there they run tournaments here. They know how to set the place up and not try to overthink it too much. But Shinnecock is the same way. They know how to set that up when people Shinnecock do. And I think the USGA pushes them aside and often does that. And I think they finally asked for help, have gotten help, have not tried to overthink it. And what we're getting right now is what we really want, which is a great golf competition and the golfers being the story, not the golf course.
John, who comes off the pace to challenge for the Gary Woodland today?
I got to think, you know, I love Koepka so much. I really do. I've never met the guy. I've never talked to him. I think he has been so overlooked and sort of so abused from a lack of publicity standpoint. I mean, I don't even think Fox had him in their promos for the U.S. Open this year. I remember, I think it was last year, the Tour Championship in September, they didn't even have him come into the media center for an interview pre-tournament, as they often do with the top contenders. And I think he's actually fed off of this inattention to his greatness. I mean, he's won four of the last eight majors, for crying out loud. And so I really like Koepka's chances, as tough as it's going to be for somebody to win three U.S. Opens in a row. I think he's very, very... I think he would love to do it, and I think he's a fierce competitor. And I think Justin Rose would be, you know, another guy. Two obvious ones, the two ones close by. And, I think Oosterhuizen, which I can never pronounce right, I'm sorry about that. But I think he's someone kind of to watch a little bit in the mix, certainly. You know, won a major championship, has been in and around the hunt on Sundays before, the Masters certainly, of course. And I think he'd be a good person to watch because I could see Woodland faltering a little bit in the first nine and giving up a couple of strokes, and then it's going to be quite a competition.
We've been talking to John Steinbrenner. John, we're gonna let go on the U.S. Open talk, but we don't want to let you go. Just one last thing we'd like to bring up before we go on golf topic. There may be something happening in the golf world today that's of huge impact to Canadians, and it's on the women's side of the game. Brooke Henderson has a 3-stroke lead in the LPGA tournament that's in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And if she wins, if she wins today, she will become the most honored Canadian professional golfer in history. She currently is tied with 8 professional tour victories. She's tied with Sandra Post, George Knutson, and Mike Weir. If she wins today, she will become the most successful professional golfer in Canadian history. So we've got 2 rooting interests today.
Well, I've got a rooting interest in that. I think she's a hell of a golfer, and that's great stuff. I did not know that. I love any time we can have a conversation and mention George Knutson. I always enjoy that. I'm surprised he didn't win more than 8, because he was really one of the great golfers. I remember growing up as a kid watching him, and I just thought he was a spectacular golfer. So that's great stuff, and good luck on that to Brooke. She's a great player, and that would be a fantastic win for her if she can pull it off.
Yeah, I always love chatting about George Knutson myself. George was an assistant pro at a local course here, and when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I got the opportunity to shag balls for George Knutson at Oakdale Golf and Country Club, and it was an honor and a privilege that he granted to a whole bunch of young caddies in those days. So, yeah, you got a chance to talk about George Knutson, and I did today. Certainly great memories there.
If he could putt, he'd have been dangerous.
Anyways, John, you know how much we love having you on the show. We know how much we love sharing our passion for golf together. And it's always a privilege talking to you on a major championship Sunday. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks, guys. It was great fun, as always, a great tradition for us. And we'll have some fun this afternoon or evening. This is going to be a great finish and a good tournament. We're looking forward to it.
Look forward to it. John Steinbrenner. Thanks so much, John. Cheers. Thanks.
It's funny. Last week I went to the Canadian Open and I witnessed 61 by McIlroy. He looked like he was going to shoot 58. Walt.
Yeah,
he was incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
He certainly was on fire. And what'd you think of Hamilton? I know you and Matt were down at the Canadian Open last Sunday.
Yeah. Very nice course, and they had record crowds, which I was surprised at.
Well, it's great to have the Canadian Open in June again. It was sort of got lost in the calendar in September. So the Canadian Open's gone back to its roots, where we always Canadian Open always used to be in June, used to be prior to the prior to or immediately after. I can't recall exactly. It may have floated back and forth, but it used to be a June tournament in the old days. And we used to get the world's greatest golfers up here. I mean, the interesting stat about Jack Nicklaus, he never won the Canadian Open, but he finished second seven times. And if you ask him, he will say the one tournament that he regrets never winning was the Canadian Open.
And he was the one who built Glen Abbey, right?
And he built Glen Abbey, and, you know, Glen Abbey fulfilled its purpose. And I certainly don't want to, at this, on today, to be critical of Glen Abbey. It's, can't say it's my favorite golf course. You know, it's a good thing that we're moving the Canadian Open again around the country as much as we can. Next year, it's St. George's. Hamilton, you know, there's some great courses in Vancouver. They've gone to Shaughnessy, Royal Montreal. It's a national open. It really should be taken to golf fans around the country. If they can find a Canadian Open-worthy site in Alberta, that would be fantastic. Western Canada, you know, deserves a Canadian National Open. If there's a facility in Eastern Canada, that, you know, the biggest issue with these things is logistics. It's not easy to throw a PGA tournament. You need land for parking. You got to get people in and out of the course. You need hospitality tents. You need a lot of land. And you need spectator venues. Some of the older courses, it's very difficult because they're tree lined and there's not the greatest places for spectators.
15-minute drive from here, St. George's.
Yeah.
It would be great.
So looking forward to the Canadian Open at, I'm pretty sure it's 2020.
That's correct.
I'm pretty sure it's 2020. Naz, we've got 5 minutes left on the show, 4 minutes actually. Like I said, I wanted to remind our listeners, Naz and I are taking a much earned break for the summer. This will be our last show. Hopefully we'll be back. We're looking forward to coming back in September, catch up. You know, I always said I wanted to be on the air when the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup.
So this is the year. We got 1 year left. Go Leafs, go.
We haven't accomplished that goal yet. We accomplished the goal of being on the air when the Toronto Raptors won the NBA Finals. And to a certain extent, that really hasn't sunk in yet. It's a remarkable accomplishment. I'm not so sure we would have predicted it with any great amount of certainty after the when the playoffs started. We knew the Raptors had a good team. Kawhi Leonard obviously took his game to a level where he was the best player in the game for the last two months. Remarkable accomplishments by Kawhi. You know, the supporting cast, and as we said, you know, it's like the NHL. You know, your third and fourth liners have to step up, and certainly Siakam, Ibaka, Gasol, most of the time, these guys stepped up. I mean, they literally played like champions, and give them all the credit in the world. And Nick Nurse, Masai Ujiri, talk about Masai Ujiri. We talked about the Raptors early in the show. We really didn't get a chance to talk about him all that much. And, you know, he rolled the dice, in so many ways this year. And it seems like every move he made, it paid off at the end. I mean, if he thought, when he was making those moves, if he envisioned exactly how it was going to die, you know, my gut tells me he must have been a little bit surprised, not necessarily that they won a championship, but that all of his moves paid off. But I mean, he's like an oracle. I mean, you know, the Oracle Arena. It's interesting. They won all three games. Masai Ujiri, the ultimate oracle and sage. I mean, just think about the moves that he made this year, and they all, in the end, they all worked out.
Wally, you have to roll the dice. Anthopoulos did it here with the Blue Jays, and it almost got them the win. Ujiri did it with the Raptors, and they won the championship. The Yankees just signed, got Edward Encarnacion from Seattle. What a trade for them. They're going for it. You need to go for it to win it, and I have to give the Raptors credit for doing that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Masai, the Kawhi trade, I mean, as soon as that trade was made, you know, he was taking a lot of heat. Not on this show. So I specifically remember having that discussion after that.
I said,
you know, you brought in one of the best players in the NBA. And if it's only for 1 year, you sort of knew you weren't going to win a championship. And with the greatest of respect for DeMar Rosen, and I'm not here to criticize his achievements with the Toronto Raptors, and none of this is meant as a criticism towards him. But it seemed like the team had gotten stagnant, and that with the existing cast, they couldn't take it to another level. Masai comes in, and that trade was staggering when it was announced. Said, why would San Antonio trade one of the best players in the league? And look what happened almost a year later. The Marc Gasol trade. Valanciunas. Like, Masai Ujiri was willing to trade two of the most popular athletes, two of the most popular basketball players. Jonas Valanciunas, who was beloved in this city, people loved him. DeMar DeRozan, people loved him. Masai Ujiri traded them, and he knew the criticism he was going to get. But he stood up, and he said, these are the best moves for the team. Man, you got to give him so much credit.
Well, it's going to be a hell of a parade tomorrow, that's for sure. We figure 1 million to 2 million, Wally?
Well, I would say anywhere from 1 million to you are using the number 3 million. That seems that means almost nobody will be working tomorrow.
For a few hours, probably not.
I'd put the number probably around. I mean, it is winding its way through downtown Toronto, and I'm getting the sign. Unfortunately, we've got to leave. Naz, last word.
See you in September, folks.
See you in September. Thanks to all of our listeners for supporting us. It's been a great ride. And as we say, we hope to be back in September. We'll see you then. Bye.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.